Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the June 18 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises out of Council Bluffs, Iowa, Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities in Hudsonville, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson from Champaign County, Illinois.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. We'll start our discussion, Jackie Vakes, as usual, with a list of topics to cover.
Well, I think we should talk about the CME force majeure on the Illinois River. Lower DDG prices and the possible impact on ethanol. I can't not say the weather, right? We've got to do weather. and the fact that there was some U.S. ethanol bought from Brazil this week and what that may or may not mean.
Sherman Newland.
There again, I think it's the rain, the effect it's having on some of these crops that are out there, the loss of possibly losing some bean acres and, you know, where we're going to end up on some of these yields. And probably more likely the USDA yields being too high, the way it's looking at this moment.
And Greg Johnson?
I'd like to talk a little bit maybe about the impact the dollar is having on commodity prices, and then also the rumblings out of China that they're getting tired of holding on to all their government-owned reserve corn and may actually let some of that loose.
Okay, and finally, Glenn Ring.
I'd like to frame the current stresses in the Corn Belt into the larger degree trends. Not to forget the long-term trends in the currencies as well, and also make note of the importance historically of the third and fourth week of June as an indicator for corn and prices in particular, but also beans.
Okay, let's start there. I like the idea of putting things in some historical context. Start with the shorter-term one, which would be the closer one, the third and fourth weeks of June. Historically, what do they mean to the marketplace?
It's often a decision point. If you go back the last 6 years, this time frame has pretty well set up direction in corn, and it's actually acted that way for a lot longer than that. The last 6 years, it's been a 50-50 thing. The problem is that overstates probability. The probability is about a 2 out of 3 that the outcome will end up being net bearish. Third week of June is often up, and the fourth week of June is often down. And if that comes to pass, I'm talking specifically corn on that pattern, then it's very common that we're about to get tanked during July. Not quite as strong a pattern in beans, or maybe not quite as contained of a pattern in beans. I also would note, if you go through even bearish years, in particular, but even bearish years, this is the window of time where you see the 1 to 3 week knee-jerk weather scare rallies. And in fairness, weather scare doesn't always apply. Sometimes it's real damage if it's your backyard. So, but it's just the time frame we often see this. And frankly, somebody asked me this morning, well, how much of a rally could you see in beans? I said $1, $1.25 by early July and still end up being in a bear market. Not calling for that, not calling for it not to happen. I'm just waiting to see what closes look like coming up here.
Is that over and above the 45 cents we've rallied already?
Yes, yes. The last thing I would throw into there is I do have a weekly turn due in soybeans next week. And the window for that turn is this week, next week, and the following week. And it's been very, very reliable. It's hit just about, it's a 16 to 18 week turn, and it's hit just about every turn save one for the last handful of years.
Okay, I want to stay with you just for a second. I'd like you to frame things in the longer term. I think you mentioned the dollar. You always take things back, sometimes really far, but yeah. I don't know how far back you're wanting to go at the moment, but your longer-term experience tells you what?
Overall, that the dollar has still probably, in terms of time, only about half done with its rally, which means I'm looking at overall roughly a 34-month rally from the low of last year, which means that we'll probably be up into late 2016, early 2017. Within that, most of your corrections in the currencies, when they start trending on a monthly degree, are going to be limited to about 3 to 5 months or less. On an occasion, you'll get one that's longer than that. You know, so the current correction we have in the dollar can last all summer, but I have no problem with it being done today, especially if it plays out as being a factor in the soybean market, the weekly turn that's coming due there. The other thing I would point out, since we're talking longer-term trends, the commodity index is the current trend that we're on, which I call the chronic bear phase, following the acute meltdown of 2008. The chronic bear phase is the second one, and that began in 2011, and you've got market after market that's been making lower highs since then. The same thing would be true of the grains and such if we hadn't had the drought in 2012. So since 2012, long-term, our highs keep drifting downward, even when the lows don't. Eventually, those typically get resolved to the downside. So I think any chance to prevent that long-term trend from occurring or interrupt it major lies in the balance of June and how these markets react.
Gosh, I was feeling so much better about the marketplace this week until just now.
Yeah, but I just told you you could have over a buck rallying beans yet.
Yes, you did.
You know what? I want to point this out, though. I just had two farm meetings early in the week, and I warned them. I said, you know, don't count on it. Don't even plan for it. But if it comes, be forewarned that that's okay within a bear market long term, if it proves to be that, and it's your one more shot to sell. So if I get it, I can't be afraid to make some sales into it. I may not want to speculatively sell it too quickly, but as a merchandiser, I'd sure take advantage of that.
All right, well, let's bring it back to present, and I know we're in the present day, but to conditions
sure.
In the field at this moment. Sherman Newlin, effect on the crop. Can you start with soft red winter wheat, since you're further south? It doesn't necessarily mean I think you've had a better shot at seeing it than a few people. What's the condition of that crop like? And then how do you build that into the marketplace? What's happening with corn, soybeans as well?
Right, yeah. I mean, right around here, I mean, the wheat crop is, you know, trying to get ready to be harvested. I think they're harvesting some in southern Illinois. I mean, but it's there again, getting too much rain on it. Your test weight's going to be affected. Your conditions are going to be affected, whether or not it starts sprouting in the head if these rains continue. And I say that especially the farther south you go. I would think those areas in some of those hard red winter wheat belts would be having a really hard time with their wheat crop and their condition, and even getting it harvested. I can't see how you can have that much rain on some of that wheat and not have it be affected, but the market doesn't seem to really pay a lot of attention to that here at the moment. Maybe it will at some point in time.
They have not, but Bill has been dumping rain on them. That's supposed to come through your region, the primary soft red regions in Missouri, southern Illinois, southern Indiana. So suddenly both the hard red and the soft red crop are pretty wet. And not just a little wet. I think the numbers remain pretty big for expectations of rainfall across that whole area.
Yes, they do, and that will have an effect. I mean, especially if it would continue on getting this crop harvested. You know, like I said, with the test weight and everything, it's got to be hurt with it. So I can't see how it can be anything but damaging to this crop. So. When will the market, take effect and notice it? I'm not sure. You know, I will. You know, we know we're outpriced in the world market. We can't seem to export a lot of wheat, and I know that's a problem out there. But it would help. It would help the corn. You know, if the wheat could start to rally, that would definitely help the corn market out. You know, but the beans are definitely your leader now, the way it's looking.
Greg Johnson, your thoughts on the wheat market and what the Andersons has been discussing. You handle a lot of wheat that goes out through the St. Lawrence Seaway.
Yeah, we acquired some elevators in Tennessee a few years back, and they're in harvest now, and they're actually finding some good test weights and good quality wheat now. That was before the rains came through, but there was some decent quality. But yeah, we're concerned, too, as Sherman said, about sprout damage and other kinds of damage. The one thing I guess I would hope for is that we don't see vomitoxin. If we would have had heavy rains earlier in the spring when the wheat was heading out, that's when you get vomitoxin. And I think there's a fair amount of high vomitoxin wheat still in storage here in the United States. And so if we can have some kind of a non-vomitoxin wheat crop this year, even if it has a little damage in it and even a little low test weight, it's going to take some blending to do. But maybe we can move some of this wheat if we can blend some of last year's higher test weight but higher vom with this year's lower test weight and lower vom, even if it has a little bit of damage. So it's going to be a mess. I mean, it's just going to be a logistics nightmare. And the one thing I guess I would point out is the wheat is there. It may not be high quality wheat, but the quantity is there. And that's going to compete with corn. So it's going to keep a lid on how high corn prices can go, because at some price, that wheat will compete with corn as a feed grain.
Okay, so I'm kind of building a base here where we've talked a little bit about the wheat. We've talked some about rainfall, but it really is the rain, I think, the weather that is creating some problems across the whole of the Corn Belt and throughout the hard red and soft red winter growing regions, where you end up, as you suggested, Greg, with competition because the wheat's not in very good condition for corn. On the flip side, the rain in the Midwest, and this is harder to say, but it appears that while there's a lot of it, and it's created a real problem for soybeans, especially in that southwestern part of Iowa, northwestern part of Missouri, and northeastern part of Kansas for soybeans, has not created as much of a problem for corn. May, in fact, if you look at it across the board, still be building yield for corn at this point, unless we continue to get rainfall. And I'm wondering how much, are we at a preface, at a point, and maybe Jackie, you can take this up, where corn's looking both ways. It could be really good, or it could start to take the top end off of it. And soybeans were pretty clearly going to do some damage to that market.
Yeah, well, there's no question about that. I guess the big wild card in the bean market is just exactly how many acres did we intend to plant, and we won't know that until we get to the end of the month anyway. When you look at the corn, my experience from talking to people all over the U.S. is that where the corn is good, it is great, and where it's poor, it's very poor. There's no question, where it's just standing in water and having a really difficult time. And it seems as if the swaths of rain keep going over the same areas over and over again. But outside of those areas, a lot of those rains are really beneficial and really welcome. And I've got numbers of guys, all we hear about is the bad part of Nebraska, but I have so many guys out in Nebraska that haven't even had to turn on their irrigation systems yet. And they're happy as all get out, and I've had the remarks over this past week from Indiana and Nebraska and even Minnesota saying, we have potential to be as good as last year, if not better. And this year we have a strong profile going into the pollination time of the year, and so I just think corn has so many other things. Greg brought up the fact that we could have feedweed as a competitor, and I believe we will. Oh, and I just have to tell you this. I had one of my clients who had been down in Louisiana, and he drove back up this past week, and he actually saw a guy out in a wheat field in standing water harvesting with a combine with tracks on it. And so they're definitely trying to get it off. But I think when you look at the corn situation, we have to take up the idea that China you know, said, you know, they're subsidizing their processors right now to try and get them to buy locally. And, you know, they offered them 82 cents a bushel. They didn't do it. Now it's up to $1.64 a bushel. I don't know how high they're going to go, but they plan on going because they need to empty those silos before harvest. You know, they have a great harvest coming in. And so I think, you know, you can already see the DDG situation and the implications that DDGs, you know, that China may back off some on the DDG situation and the impact it's holding corn down. I think ultimately, if China's totally out of the market or seems to be out of the market for a while with the record crops coming on down in Brazil, it's going to be tough to really rally that market.
Greg, you mentioned China and them wanting to let go of the stocks, and Jackie alluded to that to some extent. How much of a problem do you think this is for the marketplace?
It's one of those potential problems. We don't know how much corn China has because obviously they don't release those figures. But, you know, estimates are that they've got over 1 billion bushels of corn in storage, and they're paying, who knows, 30 to 40 cents a bushel every year, and they're getting tired of paying that storage. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they do try to move some of that corn into the market, and every bushel that moves into the market is competing against a bushel from the United States or somewhere else. So, like I say, I think, you know, we can talk about the weather, and there's no doubt that it is affecting the yield to some extent, but I would say that we could still have the second best crop of corn ever. I don't think we'll beat last year's crop. We will in places, but overall I think we've got too much variability. But even the second biggest crop, combined with a lot of old crop corn, combined with wheat as a competitor, combined with China moving some corn in, combined with a good South American crop, it just doesn't feel like the corn is the bull market unless we really turn off hot and dry in July.
Before we leave corn, we probably ought to take up the Illinois River deliveries, what the CME group has talked about. That was on your list, Jackie. What did they tell us this week, and what does it mean?
Well, today they came out with what they call force majeure, and it is something that's written into the contract that says basically if there is an act of God or an act of war, we cannot be held to a delivery date. And therefore, you know, I'm sure there are penalties if you don't deliver on time. So they basically are saying, you know, the Illinois River is up. We may have some loadout issues, so they're covering themselves is what they're doing. Now, I looked at the Illinois River stage just before. It looks like it's going to crest probably on Saturday, unless something else really happens. At least that's what NOAA's projecting. And so we might see it come out of effect already next week. But it's just a way of protecting themselves. If they can't load it out, they can't ship it, and therefore they don't want to be penalized for that. It's not their fault.
I'm wondering, Sherman, when I look at the maps, Peoria, in fact, is the epicenter, at the moment at least, for the most rainfall in the last, I want to say, in the last week. And they have gotten an awful lot. And they were wet to begin with. Although, if you start to spread that out, you run across the northern third of Illinois, a good portion of northern Indiana, and a little bit into Iowa. This is a big production area for corn. Is it hurt at this time, do you think? Very much?
Interesting you brought that up. I went to a seed corn meeting actually this week in Tremont, which is just south of Peoria.
Sure.
And once we got on the road, you get north of Route 70, you see a lot of rain, a lot of ponding in the bean fields. I mean, but with that said, all the way up there, the corn looked really, really good. I mean, you can't deny that. But you could also see, like I said, all the ponding in the bean fields and all the water that was standing. And so that means there's water standing in those corn fields. You know, you go back up there another week or 10 days from now, and things will probably look a lot different. I think, you know, it has taken the top end off some of these yields is what we're thinking. You know, you're getting nitrogen loss. I mean, you could definitely see that they had some water damage up in that area. Parts of Iowa, I think, are not in good shape, southern parts of Iowa. Over here on the Wabash River, the bottoms are being flooded out. I mean, I've got a client in mid-central Western Illinois that, you know, they didn't get 1,200 acres of corn planted. I mean, so there are definitely some trouble areas that are out there that I think, you know, the trade has maybe gotten ahead of itself. They put out almost a 167 yield. Not saying that can happen, but right now it sure looks like, you know, they've gotten ahead of themselves, and the top end of this yield is not going to be there. And with the market already being as short as it is, and, you know, the potential for the bean market to take off the way it's looking, you know, I think we've got at least a chance for this market to come back up to the 385, 390s, you know, two area, you know, where, you know, I would look to make some sales at some point in time. But we just feel like the trade's gotten ahead of itself right here with the rains coming in. And then that is supposed to fall. So we feel like there is some rally potential. But to say we got, you know, the second biggest crop ever, I think right now is just not in the cards. I mean, you've got crop conditions going down a little bit. I think it'll be interesting to see what crop conditions do next Monday and how the trade reacts to that.
How much time do each of you think we need to get a better handle than we do today? And maybe it might be just through the acreage numbers on June 30th. Or maybe through the first week of July or July, the middle of July when pollination happens, to really get a better handle on the corn market based on the rainfall and the potential damage it can do and what's expected over, I guess, the next 10 to 12 days, because it looks to me as if this is a point at which things turn. Maybe I'm wrong. Glenn, is this a turning point in the market for you?
It is. What the safest way for me to say that is July 6th or 7th, the market will have told us, I think, by then. From a less safe standpoint, like I said, I'll stick with the pattern if the market comes through of being up this week or having rallied this week and being down next week. I'll probably know by then also for the markets to tell me. I also remember the one thing I had was challenged in a meeting the other night that the markets aren't caring about the rain or not responding to it. And the guy was talking about, well, I'm as wet as I was in 93. I knew where the guy lived, which was far eastern Iowa. I said, in 93, the Mississippi River was 6 miles outside of its banks. I said, how far out of the banks is it now? And he just quietly said, it isn't. And I said, so I said, but I'm not challenging that the wetness isn't the problem. What I pointed out to him then is I showed him the 1993 chart where we shot up into the end of June, then didn't rally again. We drifted all the way back down into September, almost matching the lows, before we discovered the damage through harvest. So I really, this next, it's only going to take 2-3 weeks for the market to decide.
Yep. I would agree with you, Glenn. And you know, I think one of the things, and Todd knows this, everybody talks about acreage. Everybody talks about the weather. What about the grain stocks report? The grain stocks report, to me, is going to tell us a whole lot more about the price direction, probably even than the acreage report is going to, because, you know, when I look at, I've just been waiting for July beans to show any kind of sell pressure. I haven't seen any sell pressure on July beans. Where's the sell pressure on old crop corn? And when we know going into this report that, you know, the farmer was holding a higher amount of both last year, if that comes out and it's confirmed again that they're still hanging on to this grain, you know, I'm not sure that the trade is not going to just say, hey, that's more important right now than anything that's going on out in the fields, because it just means there's, you know, well, you know, they always look at farmers' hand as being weak hands, right? I mean, that's how they say it. And so the best thing that could be is if we'd see them exceed the 6.6% sales that they made last year between March and June on corn and the 11.5% sales they made on beans, but I wouldn't bet my life on it.
This system of the human behavior pattern that I typically follow, and I couldn't agree with you more on that. The human behavior right now is the farmers are dug in, fighting a losing position on a year-on-year basis. And so, you know, if we get a flash rally, granted, we'll get some grain moved out, but the commercial entities that I work with, some ethanol and some others, just tell me that they can just sit on their hands because they're getting all the corn they need. So they aren't going to be pushing bids at any time. And he says they think they really got the farmers stuck long on them, you know, around northern Iowa, southern Minnesota areas in particular, northeast Nebraska.
Yep.
A lot of farmers just do corn, just, you know, not a problem getting it. So,
yeah, and
well,
I've got.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, anecdotally, I mean, we've got local ethanol plants and corn processors cutting back on hours, only open 4 hours a day, not buying corn for the rest of June or the first half of July. Their needs are met. If you wanted to sell them corn, you have to contract it for last half July or August. So that's a pretty and you're seeing basis levels weaken. So that's
right.
A pretty good indication that there's still a lot of old crop corn out there. And that June 30th stocks report, as Jackie said, may be just as important, if not more important, than the acreage report. And so I'm going to show my age here a little bit, but for the first 15 or 20 years that I was in the business, you know, they always told me, and that was back when corn was $2.50 a bushel, they always said you don't have $3 corn because it's too wet. You have $3 corn because it's too dry. And the point
right.
is, you know, this wet weather is affecting some of the yields. If you have an 80-acre field, you might lose 4 or 5 acres to ponds, and the other 4 or 5 acres around that are going to be down. But the other 70 acres are probably pretty good, if not great. A drought year like 2012, every one of those 80 acres was affected. You know, this year, 5 or 10 of those acres are affected. So I think we just have to keep that in mind, that there are problems out there, and it's very variable, but you know, I don't think it's a disaster yet. Now, if it turns off hot and dry in July, that's a different story. But because of the wetness, I'm not sure that that's a bull market in the making.
Hey, wait a second. I want to ask you a different question. Going back to the historics, you don't have $3 corn and because it's too wet, but you have $2.50 corn. Why don't we have 4 1/4 corn? I mean, it would seem that 5 1/4 or $5 would be, or $5.50 would be the dry corn, right?
Right. We don't have 4 1/4 corn today because the funds and the speculators aren't participating yet. I mean, they're actually short. If you could get the funds to cover their short positions and actually go long, we would have 4 1/4 corn. But, you know, the funds just simply aren't interested in buying corn, and the commercials are more hand to mouth. And so without the fund participation, that limits how high we go. We wouldn't have had $7 and $8 corn without the funds back in 2010, 11, and 12.
We also wouldn't have had $7 and $8 corn without a 72 on the U.S. dollar compared to a 94 right now. And so I think, you know, my perspective is that the dollar has had an impact as to why we're sitting where we are too. You know, and even if it's only the impact of perception, it has had an impact. You can't have that kind of a rise in the U.S. dollar and expect to get higher prices because you're just not as competitive in the world market anymore.
But the futures market is a future-looking market. I mean, you know, they know we've got a big old crop carryout coming into this. I mean, unless we get a really big bearish surprise, you know, it's already been priced into this market. What if you keep getting rain and this yield goes from 166 to 161? You know, what if you lower the carryout quite a bit? I mean, I think that's going. I still think the weather's a big factor going forward into this, where this market goes. Because I think beans still have quite a bit more upside to them. I mean, I know, you know, that's corn and beans, but I think that will, you know, play into it.
I don't know.
I'd like to take a quick crack at that one about the rain, and that is. Now, I remember back in one of the times in the early 90s, and I was working as an advisor to one of the major farm advisory groups, and they were, you know, very bullish. And I, having grown up out in, you know, just northwest of the Nebraska irrigation area, and saying, you guys keep forgetting about us. You keep forgetting about these other areas. And if you keep getting the rain in just even where the radar shows today, central Illinois, across Missouri, maybe the southern edge of Nebraska, well, the guys, or excuse me, southern edge of Iowa, guys in Nebraska, eastern South Dakota, Minnesota, which just lost their drought designation finally, you know, go from dry to wet, I love the chances for yield. You've got a whole lot of areas that are going to benefit from this wet. So I'm not lobbying for any particular corn yield. But I am warning that, you know, people better be careful about getting hung up too much on the, you know, relatively localized, let's call it regional areas, dragging the yield down that broadly.
Yeah,
I'm not wildly bullish. I'm not saying that. I just think there's
no
market to come back up because there's so many the trade is leaning so short already that if, you know, we could get something to spark it and get it going, you know, we could get some, you know, some price movement back to the upside.
And there's no question that the energy is there to do it in short covering if we can get something to go. But it's got to be able to last beyond the 4th of July. You know, the bulls need it to keep raining, or to turn on and dry.
No kidding. And when you look, you know, Sherm, you talk about how short the funds are. You know, they've pared down by 140,000 already on their corn shorts. They, on the bean side of things, they pared down well over 100,000. They're down to 60,000 on bean short and 88,000 on corn. I mean, they've already, granted, they could go all the way to zero and change the other direction if they wanted to, but they've really taken a lot off of the top already.
Well, and Jackie made the point earlier. She's already identified basically the big long in this market. It's the cash owners of corn.
That's right. That's the scary one.
I don't argue that. There's still a lot of farmers that need to move some corn. Weigh on the market, you know. But I think if we can get a rally, I think guys need to be moving some old crop corn. Most definitely.
Oh yeah. It isn't just corn, though, Sherm. It's beans. They were holding 45.7% of the bean crop on the March report compared to 38.4 last year. That's the part that's really scary. And you know, if I don't know, Greg, you can address this, but all the guys I talk to, there's just no lines for selling beans. These guys have not been selling beans.
Well, I'm also sure they're not already have been moved.
Yeah, I kind of think the beans
in Indiana already paying 55 over for beans to get them now. And the guys I talk to in the business are saying the beans aren't out there.
That may all be adjusted in September as how many beans we actually raised last year.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
but doesn't your crush spread simply keep a support underneath the cash beans anyway? I mean, there's pretty good profits in that crush, or had been, and that's not something that's not my expertise, but I can. You know, I play the blind sow every now and then, find an acorn out there and that kind of stuff, and it just looks to me like with the crush spread being there, that's one of the reasons why I think I'd keep bidding for beans too if I could do it.
Yeah, the crush spread is over a dollar, and so that's encouraging crushers to continue to buy beans. And you're seeing on the river, elevators are paying 9 over, 12 over on the river for beans. That's above delivery, so. You know, if there was plenty of beans out there and they thought they could get them, they would just stand back and take delivery. The fact that they're paying in the cash market, you know, almost double digits over, gives you some indication that at least there in Illinois, there's not a lot of beans. Now, maybe they're out west, I don't know. But in Illinois and Indiana, as Sherman said, basis levels are 40 over, 45 over, 50 over. That's a pretty good indication that people still want the beans and that they're not moving. Now, whether they're out there or not, you know, you can argue that. I think most of them in Illinois, at least around here, have moved. You know, we've called around and doesn't seem to be a lot left, but maybe they are out in Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota. I don't know that, but in Illinois and Indiana, I think they've moved.
Some of my guys in Nebraska at the elevators are just saying, these guys, they just keep on bidding up and bidding up and bidding up, and they just won't let go. That's it. They're just sitting on them. They figure they're going to get $12. That's what they're going to get, and they're going to sit on those old crop beans. They don't care if they sit on it for a couple of years. And there's more than a few guys like that. So it'll be interesting to see what I hope they sold. That's what I'm hoping.
I don't have anything but the anecdotal evidence to support the same thing you're saying. But that is the same thing I'm hearing over on this end of Iowa and Nebraska also. And I'm hearing it from the bankers that their customers are sitting on it.
Wait, that changes the whole new crop complexion then. I mean, if the beans are in residence where we think where you're saying they are in Iowa, I guess they're not too far out of, you're probably more in the northern part of Iowa, southern Minnesota, but they're not so far out of position as it relates to the southern part of Iowa and the northern part of Missouri where the new crop's not being put in place, and that's where... I guess I've been watching and thinking, hey, for the new crop, you got to hang your hat here because damage has been done already, no doubt. And the question is, how many acres will they be able to plant? But if you've got beans in place, That may be more of a moot point than I'm thinking.
Well, could you also, and I'm throwing this out truly as a question, could you already be seeing in those areas just enough fear about that new crop supply that regionally, the people are going to be more aggressive on trying to bid for the beans, make it look like they're short, or farmers are not selling, waiting to see if they have a crop? All these questions come to my mind, but it really be starting to become a logistical regional issue rather than a national issue.
Unless, of course, it's a large enough number of acres.
Correct.
Right.
And right now it is, right? I mean, right now it's a big enough number of acres. If it was 10 million or 12 million or 8 million on Monday that were not planted and you start to pare that back, it's a large enough number of acres probably to make a difference in the ending stocks numbers for the coming year.
And not to mention you got 3 million acres that are rated poor to very poor last week, too, and I don't expect that to be any better come Monday. So, I mean, and if
I
you're
would
a technician,
agree.
I mean, you guys are technicians. I mean, you look at a chart. I mean, we've rallied beans almost 50 cents already, and, we're above the 50-day moving averages. We're closing in on some 200-day moving averages. I mean, you're going to get some black box trading start to trigger here before too long, possibly. Like Glenn said, we could take the beans up another dollar from here. I mean, what do you think that's going to do to the corn market?
We're right against the weekly trend line, though, and we've traded up to it today at a 981.75 and stopped dead like a rock. So I don't know. The one thing we keep talking about, the 10 million whatever it is acres that are missing, I think the one thing we're missing, too, is where are the double crop acres planted already? The last 3 years, we've planted between 7% and 10% double crop acres. That would be between 6 and 8.5 million acres of double crop beans. Granted, we're going to lose some of those, but you wouldn't expect them to be planted by now anyway.
Yeah, but they wouldn't have been planted there. Those would be first crop acres where we're talking about in that part of Missouri,
right.
I think, right?
Right.
And what conditions are, I mean, it doesn't look to me like you can have big acres and big yield in beans now. You can have one or the other.
Yeah, well, I mean, 3.5 million to 6 million could possibly be full season beans. There's no question. But I mean, we've got to recognize that all some people take it as if these are all full season beans and the world has come to an end on these 10 million acres. And that's not the way it is.
You go out and plant beans now. You're not going to get top end yield on what you go out there and plant right now. It's just not going to happen.
I'll come back over here, though, in this eastern Nebraska area and such, where they haven't started to pump water yet. A lot of the beans will end up still be on dry crop ground, so they're probably getting closer to an ideal or almost irrigated beans right now. So I do think that you're going to see some areas, again, benefit on the yield side of beans from this situation. So it's going to be somewhat of a trade-off. And I don't want anybody out there that's dealing with this wetness, et cetera, to think that I'm not sensitive to that.
No,
I absolutely
me
am.
Either.
I fought it myself when I farmed. The most frustrating time was too much rain rather than too little. And but you got to be careful that because there's a reason why the old adage is rain makes grain. Other areas are going to benefit, so it does mitigate some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's a disaster for corn or beans either one. We're just not saying it's going to be the record yield that the trade has already figured in.
And I agree with that 100%. I do. Yeah. But for me, I pointed out to people, if the long-term trend in the dollar continues, if the long-term trends in the grains continue, and I've got cycles due next year, a year from now, looking like we'll continue down in the grains, et cetera. What these interruptions in supply are going to do is affect the magnitude of the decline, but it may not affect the direction when all said is done.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Greg, what's your thought on the soybeans?
I think we after listening to everything, and I had this opinion before. There's such a wide range of opinions out there on what the bean yield is going to be and what the bean acres are going to be, and we don't know that yet. And so, we've had a 50-cent rally. Could we get another 50-cent rally? Yes, because I think there's fewer old crop beans that will limit the rally if we do get one, if the funds decide to cover their short position. And the farmers don't want to sell too many new crop beans because they don't know how many bushels they're going to have per acre. it's a completely different story on the corn. Number one, they've got old crop corn to sell. They're just hoping for a 15 to 20 cent rally. That will limit some of the corn rally. And then number two, the corn's far enough along and good enough in places that they know they're going to have corn to sell. So I think any rally will be met with selling in the corn market first. But when it comes to beans, it won't be met with aggressive farmer selling, right or wrong. I just don't think it will be. And so you have the potential, you know, for wider swings in the bean market. And so I just think that, you know, could they go up a dollar? Well, that sounds like a lot, but could they go up 50 or 75 cents? Yes. Will they? Maybe not. But, you know, we're talking pretty big swings in beans, whereas I don't think we can talk those same kind of swings in corn. I just think the rallies will be met with farmer selling, and that will limit the rally in corn.
One last topic to cover. It comes from you, Jackie Vakes. You mentioned DDGs. What about them?
Well, you know, that's certainly one of the things that we have to watch pretty closely. You know, that China's talking about cutting back on how many DDGs they take. I think it's related to the idea that they want to try and clean up corn stocks and do whatever they can over there to get corn moving. You know, and that is a significant portion of margin in a lot of our ethanol plants. You know, one of the things that's been good is that we've had good margins in the ethanol plant. I don't think that it will necessarily hurt the use or the production of of ethanol. It appears that ethanol, in fact, you know, Todd, after you and I talked yesterday, I was doing some thinking last night. You know, some of those U.S. buyers bought 10.6 million gallons of ethanol from Brazil this past week. And I wondered if that's because we're short of ethanol here in the U.S. and or we're priced higher in the U.S. than they could get it out of Brazil. And maybe Greg could answer that because, you know, I know Andersons have ethanol too, but I just wondered if that was the implications because they claim the driving is big. It's just always a concern whenever you see the margin situation come under some pressure from the ethanol on the ethanol side of things.
Yeah, I agree. I think we are seeing that it's harvest time down in South America, and so I think they're trying to move product, and I think that's what's going on. You know, basis is usually cheaper, and you can usually buy something a little bit cheaper this time of year out of South America. And so I don't know that, you know, anything's different here in the U.S. It's pretty consistent. Ethanol margins are still positive, and so people are still using about the same amount. But, you know, it does work to bring in ethanol out of South America at certain times, and this is one of those times.
All right, let's wrap things up. I think, Jackie, I'll start with you. Any final word for producers, end users on this marketplace?
Well, I think from an end user standpoint, you can probably at the moment anyway go hand to mouth. Most guys are bought out ahead anyway, and find out what we learn off the June 30th report. When it comes to producers, you know, you've got to know where your profitability comes, and you cannot gamble. So don't get attached to a futures price. Take a look at what your cash market is doing, and if your basis isn't getting any better. In fact, it's actually widening. Take advantage of it.
Jackie Vakes, of course, is with Stuart Peterson. She's from right here in Champaign County, Glen Ring, at Glen Ring Enterprises out of Council Bluffs, Iowa. Any final word from you?
Yes, I would. Two things is, you've got a couple of weeks here. If we get a flash in the pan type of rally, I want to take advantage of that. If it continues to rally beyond the 4th of July, I'll probably back away. But if we don't get any more rally and we start breaking the lows we already have for this year, I can't be shy because we're breaking through all sorts of long-term support areas. You could have a buck down in beans as fast as you could have one up. And the same thing with corn. If I get December corn below 362 on a closing basis, especially June 30th or later, all I'm holding on to is hope from there on out, at least from a technical and a timing standpoint. The other thing I would keep an eye on here is this is kind of out of left field. If the cattle market breaks down as well, it could be my final pieces of a puzzle of just a more general commodity downturn. If everything starts sinking together, I'm not going to fight it because I've got one more year left in these bear markets.
And Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois.
Yeah, I think weather is still going to be the key here the next few weeks. You know, I think the trade is going to hinge off that and then see what that June 30th report is going to say. I mean, if weather conditions still continue to make the crop look like it's getting smaller, I think the prices can still work higher. So just watch the weather and be prepared to pull the trigger on old corn or possibly some new crop corn if it would rally into some of those resistance areas. And just be prepared.
And Greg Johnson of the Andersons?
Yeah, the June 30th USDA quarterly stocks report on corn concerns me. I really hope we can get this 10 to 15 cent rally in corn that before the June 30th report. I think farmers need to use any kind of rally we get in corn to clean up old crop stocks and get some new crop corn sold. The beans, it's just a shot in the dark at this point. I'm not as negative on beans. I understand they can go higher or lower, but the old crop corn especially concerns me, and I'd like to get an opportunity to get that sold up here in the next week or 10 days.
And our thanks, of course, to Greg Johnson, Glenn Ring, Sherman Newland, and Jackie Fakes, who joined us on this 18th day of June for Commodity Week. You can always find us online at WILLAG.org. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.